Kate Botello.
I'm Peter Payette, in for David Castleman.
And this is The Green Room, a weekly conversation about arts and culture from Interlochen Public Radio.
So, Kate.
So, Peter.
This weekend, I was at a big party, dinner, dance.
Okay.
And there was a live band, and there was a dance floor, kind of like an average-sized dance floor for a typical wedding. And it was full.
Okay.
How many people would you guess were dancing with a partner?
Oh, wow. Okay. How many? What kind of music was it?
Bluegrass.
Bluegrass. I would say not a lot, maybe half.
So I only saw one couple.
One.
And they were great fun to watch. And I got to thinking, why do we dance alone so much? When we social dance, we're generally, we might be dancing next to somebody, but usually we're dancing alone. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that's interesting because it used to always be that you danced in a couple. I mean, you just did it that way for years and years and years and years and years. And I think really somewhere around, you know, the 60s when people started doing the Holly Gully and the Watusi and all of that, that kind of developed the individual dancing style. And I think since then, partner dancing has just kind of gone out of vogue.
Right. And that is pretty much the story that I found when I looked around. I found a guy named Max Pearl, and he writes about music and popular culture. And he wrote a great piece in Talking Points Memo. We'll link that on our website. And he kind of explains the decline of partner dancing. And he says it started in the 50s when dances like the twist were popularized. And so now you've separated the couple. They're still dancing next to each other, but not with each other. And then he says the 60s delivered the knockout punch.
Couple dancing and like dancing with rules and regulations and like, you know, formal steps began to disappear even faster.
So get to the point now where you're back in the full frame. And you should be taken through.
Michael Wirth was growing up as partner dancing was being shunned in the U.S. He was a kid in the 50s, and his sister would show him how to do dances like the jitterbug. But he didn't start dancing himself until he was 38. He says he dared himself to try it, to see
if I focused on something creative, could I accomplish it?
He quickly became interested in partner dancing, and that led him to ballroom dancing, which was pretty much the only game in town back then. But it didn't last long. He says it's no fun memorizing all those steps.
I found it pretty laborious. I wasn't enjoying myself. And if I wasn't going to enjoy myself, I wasn't going to keep doing it.
So he decided there had to be some other way. And he came up with a method that's all his own.
And you don't do it by pulling on your partner with your hand or releasing the hand. The weight on the hand stays the same when you do it.
It looks pretty typical for a couple dancing. But what they're doing is they're leaning away slightly from one another. And he says if you do this correctly, you should create a kind of shared balance point with your partner. And then your movement and your partner's kind of together gravitates around that shared center.
Essentially, when you're coming off the same balance point with somebody else, you are dancing actually as one being with 4 feet, 2 feet on the ground all the time, sliding your feet around.
And Michael says once you've learned his technique, you can use this method to do pretty much any dance, a waltz, a tango, you know, whatever.
All right.
So, Kate.
Yes, Peter.
So we put you out there with one of Michael's dancers. What did you think? Were you on your way to becoming part of a four-footed creature?
I don't know. I think it would take some work. I mean, this was very cool, but it was also really kind of goes against anything that you normally would think to do with partner dancing. It just kind of goes against those instincts because, again, you are creating this weird fulcrum of balance. You have your toes pointing toward each other with your knees bent, and then I put my hand on your shoulder blade and you lean back on me a little bit, which never happens in standard partner dancing. And then I lean back on you and suddenly we've created this kind of creature, yeah, and then you can just kind of move around from there. It's like this push me pull you. You can kind of float around and just glean what the other dancer wants to do.
So would you agree, he says this is leaderless. Neither partner is really leading the other. Does that seem?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, this is definitely a co-production between the two of you. I mean, in like standard partner dancing that I know how to do, if you're a good follow and you just relax, the lead can pretty much just chuck you all over the dance floor, and if you know the steps, it's going to look beautiful.
Michael says he's taught thousands of people to dance this way, many through the iDance program at Northwestern Michigan College. But it might not be for everyone. Pat Reeser-Hokia also teaches dance in the area, and she's danced plenty with Michael. She knows his method works, But she thinks some people just want specific instructions.
They want to feel at ease, and so they need to learn something to start with. And so some people need to have the outline or the structure of the movement.
But Michael believes his approach makes partner dancing accessible to anyone.
All they got to do is have the desire to do it, and everybody can do it really well.
If you want to see what Michael Wirth and a lot of his students are doing on the dance floor, there's a big social dance this weekend in Traverse City that his group is putting on. It's Saturday night at the Opera House. It'll be mostly blues, swing, and jazz music. You can find out about that at idancetc.com. We'll also link that on our Facebook page, Interlochen Public Radio.
Glide and step, and then step and glide.
And everyone, stand aside.
Look, he's dancing.
You could learn to poke if you...
And this is The Green Room from Interlochen Public Radio.
So, Peter, you and I both tell stories on the radio. That's our job. But telling stories on radio is one thing. But trying to tell stories live and in front of an audience is something else entirely.
Right. When you tell a story on the radio, you're usually sitting in a room by yourself.
Yeah. It's much easier. Karen Stein is the organizer of Hearsay Storytelling in Traverse City, and she says the key to live storytelling is believing that your story is important.
There are so many people who have said to me, I don't have any stories, to which I say, that's impossible. You're an adult. Like, you've lived a life. And even if you don't think you've had achievements, you still have had stories that are experiences that made you who you are.
The third season of Hearsay kicks off at the Inside Out Gallery on Monday night. For more info and to find out how you can pitch a story to Hearsay, go to interlochenpublicradio.org.
This is The Green Room from Interlochen Public Radio. Michael Culler engineered our show. We had help today from Dan Wanshura. Sally Isley is our executive producer. I'm Peter Payette.
I'm Kate Metello. See you next time.